Hello, everybody. It is time for Shop Talk Show, episode number 202. This season, we're doing topic shows, themed shows, where there's a specific topic, and we're going to talk about that topic for most of the show. Still do some of your questions, still have guests on, and in fact, we have some awesome guests today. Ooh, are they good? And we're going to talk about that topic. I'm going to tell you what that topic is in just a moment, but first, there are two sponsors that I need to tell you about at the top of the show because they are wonderful. One of them is Braintree. BraintreePayments.com is where you want to go. Developers around the world have embraced the Braintree V.0 SDK is the easiest way to add secure mobile payments to their apps and websites. And boy, is that true. We are implementing Braintree as we speak at CodePen. And the developers that are working on that project are loving how nice the APIs are. It's a set of APIs for taking money, for taking Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Venmo, credit cards, even Bitcoin. Pretty fancy stuff. We'll tell you more about Braintree, BraintreePayments.com. Later in the show, because I need to tell you about Fluent, the O'Reilly Web Conference. Web is everything at this conference. It's a big, the stellar lineup. It's coming up March 7th through 10th. They're doing 2 days of intensive training on things like Node, React, CSS layout, some of our favorite things to talk about here on Chop Talk Show. You'll definitely come out of that smarter than you were before, and some days of, sessions covering lots of different stuff, topical-based things as well. Will React hold off Angular 2? Go find out. Those are the kind of conversations that will be happening at Fluent. And, this is the important part. Register and save 30% off the entire conference. Shop Talks, plural. That's the discount code at Fluent. Check that out very much. But for now, we're going to get on with this thing. Dave, please kick us off.
Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Quire.
Hello. So as I promised, this is going to be a topic-based show. We're going to be doing a number of these this season where we have guests, like we always do. We're going to answer some of your questions, like we always do, but we're going to keep it more themed around a particular topic, and the topic this time was suggested by one of our guests, Monica, and you'll have to help me out with your last name, I'm afraid. Hi, Monica.
Monica Piotrowicz. Hi, everyone. Super excited to be here.
I met Monica virtually at a CodePen meetup. Monica, you're at Shopify, yeah?
Yes, I'm a senior lead of front-end development here.
So a perfect person to talk to on any Shop Talk Show. But when we were talking about things to do, we thought maybe it would be kind of interesting to talk about career paths, and we can learn about Monica's career path, and we'll talk about that kind of thing. And somebody else with an interesting career path we have as a return guest, Laura Hogan. Hey, Laura.
Hey, how's it going? I'm so happy to be back.
Yay. Laura is at Etsy, right?
That's right. You got it. And yeah. I'm a senior engineering manager there.
Senior engineering manager. Mm-hmm. Senior engineering manager and senior front-end development lead.
You got it.
Shopify. Yep. So pretty cool. So all four of us, of course, have a career path of some sort. I thought maybe at the
Okay, let's pretend.
Okay, let's start with you then, Dave, just quickly. I thought what we could do is I'm sorry if there was like light preparation time on this, but could you just give us like a 60 seconds or less version of your career path, starting as early as is relevant to tech, Dave?
I started making websites when I was 14, like in 1995, and I've made them as a hobby, and then I started making them professionally in about 2007. Or 2006, 2007.
Okay. Meaning people paid you to do it.
People paid me to do it. Yes. Otherwise it was just kind of hobby for the love, building, forums and blogs and things when that was really difficult.
Okay. And is that it? You went on to.
Now I work for a small 3-person company called Paravel, and we make websites and help large companies make websites. That's sort of what we do.
And so yours is pretty linear in that you haven't bounced around very much.
You know, it was kind of like found a good job and you just stuck with it.
Yep. Made it work.
Yeah. And you're kind of a co-founder, as it were, for this thing.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay. Okay. That was 60 seconds or less. Lara.
Hi. Yeah. So I like really struggle with this. So when I was in high school, Neopets, remember Neopets? At all?
Mm. Is that the kind that you had to feed?
You had to feed the pets, right? It's online. So they had like an HTML and not CSS, just HTML tutorial. This is in the days before CSS. So like I learned how to like build a guild for my pets using their HTML tutorial. And I ended up like using that knowledge to like build little websites for friends and for like as an intern in college, like, you know, random stuff. And then I'm one of those weirdos that has a very non-linear trajectory. So it's not 60 seconds is too few, but I can say I job hopped from like project management roles to front end developer roles to eventually manager roles, all while having tons of side businesses that helped me build up the skill sets that I needed to like end up being like an okay manager and a coach to help other people with their career paths.
What's an example of one of those sides?
I ran a wedding photography business. I ran a wedding website that helped LGBT couples be connected to wedding vendors that were eager to work with them. I was certified as an EMT. I mean, like, it's just a bunch of weird.
Wow.
Yeah, weird stuff. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Monica?
Sure. So I have a degree in biology and psychology. So naturally, that led me to become a front-end web developer because, of course.
And psychology.
Yeah, very related. Very related to my day-to-day. When I started school, I thought, you know, maybe I'd end up in academia or I don't know what I was really thinking. But suffice to say, by the time I graduated, I knew I didn't really want to go into either of those fields. But throughout my undergrad, I kind of started dabbling a little bit in HTML and CSS during some summer jobs. And so after I graduated, I actually went back to school to do a program at a local college that was like a year long, all about the web. And that took me into an internship, which I then, I guess, parlayed into a couple jobs at various agencies. And while there, I always, I guess, found myself pretty interested in how teams worked and the role of process on a project. I got to be a project lead pretty early on, which I liked, but it was a few years and a few companies later before I got to do that again. But that's mostly because I kind of took a couple different kind of roles and wasn't necessarily going down that trajectory the whole time. But eventually at Shopify, front end was a new discipline when I had started, and I had been building a lot of foundations for it. So when it came time to leadership, it kind of made sense for me because I was already kind of doing a little bit of it anyways. And I definitely think that kind of helped me transition into the role I'm in today.
Interesting. And how long at Shopify then? Quite a number of years, probably.
Probably about 2.5 years. And I started working as a web developer, I think, in 2008. Yeah.
Yeah.
2008. Yeah.
Yeah. Similar for me. It was 2007 or 8 for me as well. You know, it's kind of like I started, I can think of it because I started CSS Tricks like right away. like I had no business doing that, but I just did it anyway kind of thing. So it's kind of like the start of that was really the start of my career too. The biology angle is fun. I feel like you should make your own like CSS framework where everything is named after like cells. You know, what is a div if not a cell?
Yeah, it takes the whole like, the atomic design takes the chemistry aspect to it. Maybe there's like some sort of a biology living organism.
Yes,
thing
steal that stuff. Make it more about cells than
kingdom
atoms.
Phyla. Blah, blah.
Oh my goodness! Oh,
species, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. So mine timing wise was pretty similar. Definitely had the I need a website for my band thing and then do that. And then I think the divs get you sometimes. Like there's like this moment where like kind of feeling powerful where you've like registered a domain name and you've made a thing and you've put it online and you're like, yeah, that was awesome. Anybody in the world can see this. And I was, remember being excited about that. Did a little bit of programming in middle school and high school, and then went to college for that and was disenchanted by it only because the computer science classes were hard, I thought. And I was like busy bowling and stuff. I was not a super good student. So I was like, I need to leave this hard stuff. And I went to art because I had a friend who was getting an art degree, and his life looked a heck of a lot more fun than mine did. So I kind of just ended up copying him, thinking, I'm a smart person. My life will be fine no matter what. what I do, which I stand by because it's been fun. And then it was a little hard, a little slow start after college trying to get jobs, you know, did a lot of pre-press was my history, which is like getting digital files ready for printing presses. And on the side was learning more and more stuff about web because we did very little web in college. And eventually a little company took a chance on me in Madison, Wisconsin to do web stuff. And I learned really fast and hot there. And then Woofoo after that was a startup thing, and then went to SurveyMonkey for a while after that, and then kind of broke off on my own. So not like a ton of different companies under my belt, but plenty of different experience, you know, and writing about it. So that was that was all four of ours career paths really quickly, possibly somewhat longer than 60 seconds, but pretty close. And I had a miniature trick here that I wanted to play on us, and that is that I think all of us focus on or did, and this probably maybe rightfully so, and I didn't warn anybody for this, but isn't it easy to focus on the things, the big things, mostly the things that went well? Like mm-hmm. I started at this place and I was happy about that. So in my mind, I put a mark right there. That's a big important thing that happened in my career path, and not so much the things that didn't go so well, right? I don't think any of us in 60 seconds would have been like, well, then I went to this job and it absolutely sucked, so I left immediately, you know?
Like, you're so sneaky.
would anybody put a failure moment into their 60 second version of theirs? Does anybody want to share one? It's okay if you do.
I was laid off of my first internship, actually, which was a really, really tough thing to go through. I was 2 months in. Everything was going really well. But the company ended up losing a couple of clients. And so I was the newest person in. And so I was the first person out. So that was I thought to myself, like, well, this is an ominous way to start down my career.
Yeah.
Hard I lasted 2 months.
I was making websites for a real estate company in Phoenix, Arizona in 2007. Oh. It did not go well. Valentine's Day 2007, we were locked out of our office and I was owed like a month and a half back pay, which if anything has taught me, it's always get money, like make sure the money's in your pocket. Some people aren't as trustworthy as you'd hope. So, yo.
I was, you know, I was also laid off. It ended up, I feel like it's hard to talk about these failures because I'm such a silver linings person. Because then I found like another good job at, you know, and one company I worked at where I survived 5 rounds of layoffs. I ended up being able to like make up what I did every time. Like, you know, I would get a new manager every time. And so I was like, oh yeah, I definitely, this is my job now. And also all these responsibilities.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But layoffs are hard. You're right.
Yeah. But again, it was kind of like there was totally a silver lining to it because I ended up getting a fantastic job shortly after. So, yeah, I guess you never know what'll happen.
That's good. Sometimes these negative things, they're certainly, like it or not, they're part of your career paths. And you can, you know, maybe perhaps they're silver lining moments, you know. They're probably not always for some people, right? I imagine that occasionally a layoff could be more devastating than it has been for us. But that's interesting. What made me think about it is that there was a post, you know, one of our new employees at CodePen, Tim Holman, wrote a post on his CodePen blog about his career. And it was pretty interesting. I just dropped a link in the chat room. It was like all this stuff. And his is just fascinatingly dotted with things that he kind of considers failures or that the company failed if it wasn't his own failure, some kind of little like, you know, fork in the road. Like most of our career paths, if you really dig into it, are a little more complicated than just like this good thing happened and then this good thing happened. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, those are like the polished versions of like what actually happened, right?
So maybe, you know, I think, Monica, you're in Canada, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But
I'm calling in from Toronto, but our headquarters are in Ottawa, but I'm based in our Toronto office.
Yeah. There's two big Shopify offices, right? It confuses me because I don't like consult or anything, but occasionally there's like a CodePen meetup at Shopify and then it's like totally random which one it's at. Cause sometimes it's at the Toronto one, sometimes at the Ottawa one.
And we also have a Montreal office as well. So,
So Toronto, Montreal and Ottawa are all different. That's I'm going to update.
Yes, Canada has more than one city. Okay, I'm surprised by it all the time.
It's still like kind of the greater North American continuum is where we live. That's and as much as they're different, they probably share a lot of things in common. At least let me speak for the United States that I would think a very traditional career path, at least, you know, when I was going through it, would look something like you go to high school, you get out of high school, and you're like, maybe computers? And then you go to a four-year university for that. You come out, hopefully you get an internship. Maybe that's kind of mixed with the end of college. Then hopefully the internship leans into a job, and then you climb the ladder of that job. Does that seems like the most kind of cookie cutter, I guess, career path? Does that sound about right? Or
probably. I don't think there's anything really surprising in there.
Yeah, I feel like, so the degree one that always trips me up. So I, like Monica, and actually like Chris, right? Like I studied philosophy as an undergrad. And like I was actually dissuaded from taking any computer science courses in high school even. I took one because I was trying to be a rebel and disagree with my guidance counselor. But like probably a third of the people with whom I work at Etsy either don't have degrees in computer science or don't have any degrees at all.
What's the percentage?
I have no idea. I'm going to assert 30% as if I know. But it feels like a lot. It's like, you know, for a while, the CTO at the time, like, he didn't graduate from college. I work with a ton of people, probably at least of the five people who work on the performance team, two don't have degrees at all. One has like an English lit degree, and the other two have computer science degrees.
So, and I would bet globally or whatever, or like, I don't know, tech world-wise, you might be low. I would suspect it. For not degree at all, maybe 30%. And I would think if you don't have specifically a, you know, tech-ish degree, is probably higher than that. At least that's just, I have no data, but it seems like everybody I know. I mean, of us four, 0%, right?
Mine's
in art. Dave, you're Japanese, right?
Japanese, yeah. It factors in a little bit. Nope.
Well, but we can like draw pretty, I mean, I think I can draw pretty clear lines into like the things that my philosophy degree gave me that made me successful. You know, like I wouldn't have been able to write a book without being able to write well in school. I wouldn't be able to problem solve or like develop a problem statement or a thesis statement without that degree. So it definitely helped. It's like definitely I can see where it connects, but it's not a computer science degree.
Don't they? I mean, they say you go to school to learn, right?
Right.
Yeah. I wonder if it's just learning how to make an argument or tie together thoughts, which I'm not doing very well right now, or just finish a book, you know, things like that. I wonder if that's maybe what, not that you can't learn those skills outside of college, but that maybe you have an advantage.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Over the years on Chop Talk, probably number one question, if not very close, is the kind of should I go to university or not? I'm sure we've all seen blog posts on this subject and stuff. It's on a lot of people's mind, particularly as they're approaching the end of high school or perhaps like maybe chose not to go to college right away and are looking at this career and trying to go into it. Maybe we don't need to talk about the like, should I go to college or not, but what are other possibilities if you don't follow that cookie cutter one that I just described? I mean, would you recommend that somebody goes for philosophy to college? Would that be fine? Is it fine if you want to, if you're not sure what you want to do, maybe you go to a community college and pick something really specific or a vocational kind of thing?
I mean, absolutely. And I think about all the career changers, right? Like the people who, you know, even got a degree and then decided to go to a boot camp, or in New York City, there's this group called the Recurse Center. And we hire a ton of people who have graduated from that, which is, you know, people who are like pretty brand new to engineering.
What's the name of that one?
The Recurse Center, formerly known as the Hacker School.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. And I'm sure we all know that there's many of these without you know, like being weird sponsory. There's what? The Iron Yard. There's like General Assembly. There's the Flatiron School, right? There's a whole bunch of these named things. Then there's the online versions of most of us have heard of Code School and Treehouse and Khan Academy, right? There's plenty of the ones where you don't necessarily need to go anywhere. There's no brick and mortar involved at all. Is that, it's starting to feel, at least to me, like that's straight up could be a part of your career path pretty
easily. Totally legitimate.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think like that's one of the great things about those types of boot camps is that I think they allow people to make a transition into tech way later on in their careers. So let's say if you did, you know, go to college or take a particular path earlier on, I've seen a lot of people kind of use those kind of boot camps as that reset to kind of enter into this whole new world, which I think is like a pretty great way to do that fairly quickly and just kind of ramp up on, you know, like just the possibilities to learn them really quickly and maybe just dive in into tech where you were doing something completely different before.
Melanie in chat says she knows two people in her immediate circle of friends who have done this, which is great. I started keeping a list, and I think I stopped at like 15 or something just because I happen to meet a lot of people at meetups and conferences and stuff and hear their story. So it's not circumstantial to me anymore. These things seem to be working for me. Do you do some hiring involved with that process at Shopify, Monica?
We definitely work with, there are kind of local boot camps in Toronto in particular, something called HackerU. I think you've had a couple of instructors from HackerU actually on the show before.
Wes and so involved we definitely, with that one? Is that?
Wes and Brenna O'Brien, actually. Oh, right on. I think you had her on a couple weeks ago. It's really just great to see people coming out of those boot camps and just being really ready to learn more stuff. I think one thing with boot camps is that you have to, you want to make sure your expectations, I think, are kind of in line. So, you know, it's going to be really hard to do something for 9 weeks and leave as an expert. But I think there's such an amazing way to, like, kind of learn about this whole new world and kind of be your springboard to, like, find what you really love doing in tech and kind of take it from there. So it's kind of like your step one to, like, learning what you need to learn. I think that's a good way of thinking about them.
Yeah, this is minor anecdotal, but yeah, setting your expectations right is strong. Which just right means not too low and not too mm-hmm. too high. It seems like too low would be easy. It would be like I don't know anything, man, you know. But you just took this class, so you do know stuff. And then I think some places try to train that out of them, but to try to be careful not to go too strong too, because if you come out of it like cocky as heck, that might not work super great too. Like, I'm in tech, where's my 100K, what, you know, or whatever. So interesting. So that's a different way to do it. I mean, certainly you could like go write poetry on mountains for a year or something and still come into tech, right? I think the tech is like particularly like not forgiving isn't the right word, but just like, wow, you've had an interesting life. I'm almost more interested in hiring you because of
that. Well, and I would assert that like being good at your job isn't really about like how much technical knowledge you have. It's so much more about how you go about problem solving and communicating and working with others. It's all that stuff that really makes you like good at a job.
The other kind of path that I really like thinking about are people who might already be in a certain part of tech, but maybe they're not in like making lateral moves within tech. So let's say you're experienced as a designer and then you want to start doing a little bit more coding or coming in from any other path. I think that's kind of an interesting perspective as well. Like certain, depending on what company you're in and what kind of opportunities there are, I think there's that could be like another gateway, right? Like if you have chances to collaborate with other disciplines, then that can be kind of, you know, inching your way forward into like getting into something like front end from various different directions, just even within a company.
We had Dee Gill on Chop Talk once who told us about her transition from the world of finance over to dev through one of those kind of rapid fire boot camp things, and is successful at it. And I know Dee personally and is successful at it to this day. So it was kind of came at a lateral move, as you put it. This episode of Shop Talk is brought to you in part by Braintree. Pretty sweet. You've heard us talk about Braintree before. It's a set of, you know, APIs. It's like a web app for taking money online. And it takes all kinds of stuff. It takes PayPal, you know, it takes Apple Pay, Android Pay, Venmo, credit cards, Bitcoin, all through this one API, this really easy to use API. So if you're looking for the API to use to take money on your web apps, you should check out Braintree. I can vouch for it. It is pretty awesome. If some new payment type comes up, you're covered because Braintree will add it, and you don't even have to update your app because it just automatically will start doing it. You know, it's used by Uber, Airbnb, GitHub. You know, it's pretty darn legit. Simple, secure payments you can integrate in minutes. They have SDKs in 7 languages. I will name them: .NET, Node, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby, most of the entire internet, thus. Elegant code, clear documentations, braintreepayments.com/shoptalk. That's where you want to go to check out Braintree and all of its awesomeness. There's, let's say you go to college and you like learn how to, you know, do a little stuff with HTML and CSS stuff. You made your band website. You're feeling pretty good about that. Is an acceptable career path. I mean, I guess there's no, it feels weird to say there's an unacceptable career path, but let's say you're just like, that's it. I'm starting my own freelance business. I'm calling it coolbandwebsites.llc and I'm in business now. Is that cool, or is that, would you recommend against that kind of thing?
I mean, I've never freelanced, so it's really hard for me to say. But I know that I've always loved working on a team and having the chance to like collaborate really easily and learn from people around me. So I know there's definitely ways that like you know, freelancers can collaborate and learn from each other. But I would say being in that kind of environment, I think when you're starting out in particular, is super important. Like having that network, being able to like push each other and learn from each other's mistakes. If you're not working on a team, then you'll just kind of have to create your own network to do that. But I could imagine that goes a really long way, having that kind of a network.
A team is, you'll grow up a little faster maybe.
Well, I think so, just because, you know, you'll share each other's lessons and mistakes and just have that camaraderie and chance to collaborate. So you're not like having to own and solve everything like completely on your own.
Yeah, that's so well said.
You kind of have a network. You're building a network, and as jokey as the "I would like to invite you to be my friend on LinkedIn" thing is, you know, your coworkers over time will go somewhere else, and maybe there's more exciting opportunities at the place they went, and now you have at least a conversation starter. That's something from a freelance perspective you kind of really have to grind to get. You have to, because you probably don't. I don't know. You could call up your old clients and say, "Hey, do you have a job? I want a job now." But I don't know. Maybe you're not in that situation, or you don't have. It's easier from friend to friend, it seems.
Dave, you've talked about mentorship a little bit. Isn't that something that you've kind of thought about doing or wanting? Or
yeah, mentorship is, you know, that I think in a construct of a. Like a team in a corporate office or something, you kind of get that, especially if there's like a senior title and a junior title. Hopefully you're getting that. But, you know, as on your own, it's kind of hard to work in. I've felt in situations in the past, I've tried mentorship with a few people, and it's just hard because there's not really a formal process for it. You know, we're not scheduling an hour a week to sit down and do one-on-ones or something. So I'd be curious how mentorship and
not like
and
you
growing.
Like climb the side of the mountain and meet your mentor and spend 6 months training with bow staffs.
No, you just like fire up Hangouts and say, "Hey, how's it going?"
Yeah, even that's pretty good. So, Laura, do you? Yeah. What does mentorship mean to you? Like in your career, and like, do you try to foster that type of situation as a manager?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've spent a lot of time thinking about mentorships for a number of reasons. But the main one is that there's like been a lot of research out there about mentorships for women in particular in their careers, and. It's obviously super valuable, right, to have someone who you can lean on to ask questions, to get advice, to, you know, raise your name when there's like an opportunity, you know, things like that. And what studies have shown is that for women especially, women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. And what that means is that women have a lot of times when we get taken out to coffee and we're like, "All right, I can be a mentor for you, or I want this mentorship," and you get a lot of advice that may not be all that helpful, you know, especially if the person who's mentoring you is not a woman, the advice could sound really appropriate for someone who has a lot of privilege, but less so for someone who's marginalized. And so sponsorship means not just mentoring someone, but being on the hook for them in their careers. So naming them for a promotion, suggesting them for a project, you know, keeping them in mind when opportunities may arise and really being on the hook to help advance their careers. And sponsorship is really what I'm encouraging people to start thinking about as they want to advance their careers. You know, finding someone in their network that can help them not just like learn how to do things better and answer questions and feel that support, but also help put their name in the hat when the time comes.
That's fascinating. So maybe a real life example. Maybe I'm butchering this, but I'll learn while I do it. Is the over mentoring might be like a woman asks you, hey, I'm looking for, I want to get an internship. I want to like look impressive to somebody, and I go, let me tell you about getting internships. Get yourself a Squarespace portfolio. Put all your best work on there. Good luck. See you later. Bye.
Yeah. Speak up a lot. Definitely. Yeah. Just really put yourself out there, you know, which is like obviously not going to work for everybody, especially for whom, you know, women aren't supposed to celebrate their achievements publicly. Women aren't supposed to brag. Women aren't supposed to speak up too much, you know? So like there's a lot that's mixed up in there with gender stuff. And so I would definitely recommend, if you're a marginalized person, not just a woman, but a person of color, even find people who are tuned into this stuff. They might be men, right? But they, people who are tuned into like these dynamics and the death by a thousand cuts, and use them as a mentor. Lean on them, because not all advice is created equal, and you certainly want someone who's actually going to help you with your career.
Or a sponsorship would be, if somebody asked me that same question, I could be like, you know what, I'm looking at your work. I can tell that you're good. I might have some advice for you, but let me also connect you with this person, and I'm going to literally suggest that they hire you for this internship kind of thing, like a little bit more actionable.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of that type of thing and the idea of a career path, and we've already talked about like hiccups on the career path, can you foresee a hiccup? Is there people out there that are, we're all, as we all are, in the middle of their career path, and they're looking at, maybe you're thinking about your 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, where you want to be kind of thing. Is it on you to swerve away from bad moments in your career path? You know, like, do we have any advice for that kind of situation?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I'm trying to think back through my career and like, what should I have swerved around? But really, like, hitting the roadblocks is just as valuable, if not more valuable, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. And like, I guess you want to be prepared, but you want to be open as well, because sometimes those roadblocks might actually turn into something really great. And, you know, even a bad experience can at least teach you, you know, about what you want and what you value and kind of where you excel. And it's also really hard to, you know, predict the future, right? So it's, you just kind of have to, I guess, be prepared and be flexible.
One thing that occurs to me is that, like, is having some self-awareness of being in a situation that isn't as, I don't know, nurturing, or you're not learning as much as you could, or there's some kind of bad human being stuff going on that you don't like. So it kind of seems to me that this is a tricky one, because it's like, I'm in this situation this theoretical situation. First of all, is identifying that it's happened to you at all. Second is like, is there anything I can do about it? And then like, you know, it's easy to tell somebody like that, just leave. Just get out of there. And that's tough too, right? So I'm sure you can imagine what I mean. Let's say you have some awful manager. Do we have advice for that type of situation?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind, there's a great article that went around recently about starting a fund for yourself, a savings fund for yourself, in case of things like this, right? In case you do have a really awful situation, or you know, you're living with someone, that person ends up to not be a healthy living situation. You know, all those things that can happen. I think that money is like one of our biggest constraints, obviously, in making changes in our lives. And so starting that fund early, even before you might have a problem, will be huge in helping you feel a little bit more freedom in making change in your life. If something horrible ends up happening and you do need to escape it, you know?
Yeah, I think like that kind of goes to kind of trying to be prepared, I guess, so that you kind of have that escape parachute almost, if you want to think about it that way. I do think that like if there are in certain situations as well, I mean, and it can be super, super difficult. And so I think it's always going to be on a case by case, but like, you know, if you do have a terrible manager, then it's worth, you know, as much as you can trying to be open with that manager, or even maybe speaking to someone else at the company, because if there's a really toxic environment happening, you know, chances are other people are going to want to know, or maybe other people are also being affected by it. So, I mean, as much as you can, it might be worth having certain conversations. But at the end of the day, you know, your career is something that, you know, matters to you, and you want to make sure that, you know, you're getting something out of it as well. So you have to kind of do whatever right. is going to fit.
You don't have to be totally selfless. You know,
you
take a job, and part of the job is, you know, making the thing that you work for better, but it's also making sure that you're taken care of. I mean, it really should be almost be thought of in the other way. The job exists for you.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. I think that part of the preparation, and this is to Monica's point, part of the preparation can also be building your network. So you do have safe places to talk to. We all know that HR might not be the safest space in some situations. So having that network of people both inside your company, maybe outside your company, to lean on if you do end up needing a new opportunity, or if you just need someone to bounce that idea off of, like, hey, I'm feeling like this may be unhealthy. How do I process this? What could I do? Starting that network early of safe people that you can talk to will be invaluable, and not just for these situations, but for like everything that comes up.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a lot of reasons why people switch roles in companies. It won't necessarily be, out of some like really, really dire situation. You know, some people might find that maybe they're no longer aligned with, you know, what the company's doing, or like the types of problems that they're solving aren't really that challenging anymore. So I think there's a lot of reasons why people might be thinking of going elsewhere. And so, especially in those cases where maybe, you're not challenged enough, or in those cases in particular, I think it'd be good to, you know, speak with your manager and say, you know, maybe I want to start working on something else. Or I don't think there's probably things in certain cases that we can do to kind of improve our day-to-day that don't necessarily mean like just finding another company as well, because that can be really traumatic too, like, you know, having to go on the job.
There's much risk, right? Like, it's hard to know if where you're going to be going is any more healthy than the place you're leaving.
That's a tough thing. So, Monica, I've seen slides from, it looks like you spoke at GiantConf last year about problem solving for front-end developer. Laura, yeah. I know you've spoken at lots of stuff and have a couple of books under your name. You probably are, I can imagine Shopify and Etsy are both places that are like very cool about that kind of thing. But that's like a part of your career path, certainly like major like pins in the road or whatever of cool, successful things that you've done, which were necessitated through, I mean, or whatever, like you needed to have a job that was okay with you doing that at all. You know, I'm sure there's jobs out there that are like, you want to go where for
yeah.
what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that like I value so, so much. And overall, like at Shopify in particular, like we love having our team kind of get out there, and we want people to be speaking and writing blog posts and just kind of putting their names out there, because I think it's great for in individuals' own growth. I think through any of those activities, you're actually going to learn a ton. You're going to be building your own network. And so, you know, whatever we can do to kind of support that, we'll do it, because I think like the net effects are just so, so positive.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Like it's hard to remember the privilege that I have. It's like seeing the water that I'm swimming in, because I work at Etsy, and Etsy has supported me through publishing two books, writing a third through, I mean, 2 years ago, I spoke at like 15 conferences. Like it was, you know, an absurd amount of time doing things outside of my general job description. But it's so clear to me that leadership especially supports that, because they know it's good for them, and it's building our network. And I'm definitely recruiting by existing, you know, out there on stage. So I really, it's hard for me to talk about, just because it's hard to see how to make that happen at a place where that's not happening. I feel like I have terrible advice for people on this, because like I got really lucky. There was no magic formula that was like, oh, Laura, you figured it out. You went to Etsy and then therefore this happened. It's just, I got so lucky.
I feel that way too, but certainly there's some, your elbow grease behooves a little luck, you know, working hard, being positive.
Yeah. It's a mix, right? It's a mix of luck and hard work, certainly.
Pretty cool. So if people are looking to improve their career path, I mean, certainly that would be something I would suggest, because it's done nothing but open doors for me. Things like, you know, being out there and writing and, you know, attending and hopefully speaking at conferences, and, you know, anything that I've done above and beyond my kind of day-to-day has not only been good for just what it is, you know, you get a few bucks for speaking and you get a little notoriety from speaking or whatever, but it helps your career path as well, because the more you do of that, certainly the more desirable you become at other places. Certainly not a bad. Is there other things that improve your career path trajectory?
Well, I think to your point about how much it does for you, like your network, coming back to what I was saying earlier, like your network is everything, right? Whether it's finding a new job or finding a sponsor or a mentor or whatever. Like Chris, I think that we have met through like various conferences, but also doing this show and Twitter. Like Monica, I feel like you and I connected first via Twitter. Like I think it's all of this stuff that like by building that network, there are so many knock-on effects for your career just by being out there.
Twitter, if you can stand it, great for your career.
yeah, for real.
Yeah. I think just to go back to the conference thing, like I really got into speaking not by waking up one day and saying like, oh, I'm gonna start speaking at conferences. I was lucky enough to get to go to a couple conferences, and I started meeting really, really supportive people at those conferences. And someone actually suggested like, hey, like you should consider speaking one day. And that was kind of like an aha moment for me because I had never really considered that myself. And so I always kind of look back on that conversation like, you know, I'm really happy that someone kind of saw that potential in me because it really kind of sparked something in me. But it was really just kind of the act of even just being there and being around all those people who are super, super passionate kind of helped me become really passionate too. So you don't have to like start and wake up one day and say like, I'm going to necessarily do all of this at once. You can kind of start in a variety of different ways, I think.
I think that's a really good point. Not a point, but just a story. Just somebody asked you, hey, or they kind of saw something in you and said, hey, you should try doing this. I think you would be successful. I think that's actually very helpful. I think that's how a lot of people get the courage kind of to stand up in front of a bunch of people, present an idea, and just hope it doesn't go down in flames. So I think that's a very helpful thing. I've experienced that myself.
This is something I'm writing about a lot and thinking about a lot. And like, how can we help to change this industry a little bit by bringing in more diverse voices to speak and share their knowledge and like share their words? And I think a lot of it has to do with like addressing those fears. I did an anonymous survey a little while ago on Twitter. I collected like more than 300 responses just about like people's fears about public speaking. And they range from like, you know, sweating through my clothes to like, you know, being judged or being harassed or being doxxed. And like, there's so much I think that we can do to address these things. That way we can get more diverse voices sharing all this stuff with us and helping us change the industry again.
I have this written down. Are there any unfair career path limitations? And certainly that would be something.
Yeah. I mean, like you mentioned Twitter, right? Like it's becoming more and more toxic for me to like check my Twitter feed every day. And that's ridiculous. Yeah.
Certainly one of them. If we're at the same time saying Twitter, your network helps, this is a major thing that it can help your career path. And also you're going to be subject to some toxicity there. Ugh, how sucky is that? You know, that's why this comes up so often. That's why it's being talked about, is because it's both so good and so bad right together.
I know this happens. It very rarely happens to me, but it's essentially, and I'm going to cuss, so our audio guy will have to bleep this out, but it's essentially lords like DDoSing your social network, right? That they're stopping your ability to kind of communicate with people, to interact, to promote yourself. That's kind of a heinous activity. Really kind of stifling your career options if you can't even participate in the one collective medium we all kind of engage on.
So many collective mediums. If you open source something, if you write a blog post and have comments open, if you get on stage and open the audience questions up. I mean, like literally every avenue we could possibly suggest for getting your name out there and showing people your work is rife with this like potential for negativity. But okay, on a little bit of a lighter note though.
Yes, okay.
I'm curious because like, with Monica, you're in Canada. I know one of the interesting limitations I think I've seen is I've got some privilege being in New York City. There are a bunch of people who live in like Silicon Valley and they've got privilege finding jobs. Do you find that like people in your area or people who are just not in these major tech hubs also feel career limitations?
Well, I mean, I think if you compare with cities like New York and the Valley, I think there's going to be a ton of opportunities there. I mean, I think there are a lot of companies do remote, which I think is always a really great option for anyone who is kind of outside of a major tech community. I mean, being in Toronto, that's kind of our one of the hearts of tech in Canada. So I probably have less of a perspective on that in particular, just because you know, even though it's relatively smaller than some cities in the States, it's still, you know, a very large hub, and there's a ton of product companies and agencies and just a ton of opportunities in most major Canadian cities. So I wouldn't say I'd necessarily see that as a limitation, but I mean, certainly I think just by sheer volume, there's probably more opportunities in the States, but then also probably a lot more people, right? Like Canada has a tiny population compared to you guys. So it's hard to say.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is sponsored by Fluent, the O'Reilly Web Conference. Web, 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 programming people, design people, all kinds of web everything, the web platform, our kinda conference. 2 days of intense training at the beginning for people who want a tight focus on things. React, Node, CSS layout, site planning, that kind of thing. March 7th through 10th is those, and then 8th through 10th is the conference part. Again, out in beautiful San Francisco. Sessions then explore everything from foundation design decisions to the details of JavaScript workflows, the latest JavaScript frameworks, that like React versus Angular conversation will be big there, I'm sure. Hardware, chat, testing, performance, all of the cultures that make these projects succeed or fail. I should mention 30% off if you use Shop Talks, plural, when you register for Fluent, which is a heaping chunk of savings if you use that discount code. You'll come back from Fluent again this early March in San Francisco with a big picture of where web development is headed and the details you need to make it work for you. This is a huge, huge web conference, O'Reilly's Fluent Conf. Click the link in the show notes and go register and attend. Yet another note, there's this concept that, you know, I think, you know, Laura, she works at Etsy, that like that's a major point. Like, did that influence you taking the job because it was such a major company? I think it's impossible to not have sometimes a big name in the career path trajectory kind of mean something and kind of open up the rest of the doors, like kind of forever in your...
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, having Etsy on my resume has definitely gotten me to speaking at different conferences, or like maybe got me on this podcast for the first time, you know, like you never know. It's hard to know exactly. But I would say that definitely having a big name company like that on your resume will have really positive knock-on effects. I will say that conversely, you know, there are circumstances in which having like a company like Google or Facebook on your resume could be perceived as a negative, just because of the styles of work there might not fit culturally.
They're too big.
The place to work.
Yeah.
Right. It's like there's always gonna be downsides, right? But certainly, I would say for the most part, that helps. I didn't go to Etsy because of the name. I really did it because they really support women, and it was important for me to move out of the more misogynistic tech company space. But definitely it's been really positive for me to have Etsy on my business cards.
I mean, like from the other perspective though, and I mean, sure, there's like those massive names like Etsy, Google, Facebook, et cetera. But I wouldn't necessarily encourage anyone to like map their career trajectory based on kind of like resume checks, right? Because, like a resume or a business card is going to be a great like opening to a conversation, but then like you have to do the rest of it, right? So you can have great names behind you, but you know, if you weren't making an impact there, or you know, you weren't successful there, then that might come up. You know, that might come out. So I wouldn't say that like having that great trajectory or that great set of names is necessarily going to like translate into success all the time. But it certainly helps like open initial doors and like open conversations. But like you still have to, you know, like the name, I guess, just isn't enough.
Yeah. And like to support that point, like if you get declined an interview at Google, you're still okay. Like really don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I've noticed a trend. People kind of just want your Twitter bio from you in conversations, like, oh, who what's your name, where do you work, you know, or what have you shipped, you know, and so they kind of want that, like, oh, I've whatever engineered at Facebook, yeah. And Twitter and
I'm totally
Pinterest
guilty of it, though. I don't know how big of a problem it is. Maybe it is a little bit of a problem, but I'm even like, you know, I'm going to this event this weekend in Chicago, and it's just kind of like, it's like a boutique prototyping event called SND Makes, and I'm pretty excited about it, but they publish the, you know, we know we're on little mini teams with people, and they publish all the people that are going and like what their Twitter handle is and where they work and stuff, and I'm just glued to it. I'm like, and they're, oh, they're from Pitchfork? What? Oh, they're from Second City? What? Somebody's here from the Washington Post? I can't wait to meet them, you know? And I'm looking at, you know, not their name, but where they work, because I find it fascinating.
I'm interested in how much we're defined by the companies we work for or have worked with. I don't know the answer. It's a mouth blog in process here.
So I'll say that when I'm looking, Monica, I'm actually curious about your perspective on this as well with hiring. But when I'm looking at interview candidates who are coming in, I'm looking at like their GitHub activity and like what they've been contributing to, not just like what they did last. I'm looking at like, are they blogging? Are they tweeting? Like, what are they, you know, what exactly are they building? Not who are they building it for?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, going back to big names, sure. That'll, you know, catch my eye. And you know, I might kind of, I'll notice that for sure, but it definitely doesn't tell the whole story. And I think that, like, I just think even when I look back at my own trajectory, I definitely made some career moves that kind of raised a couple eyebrows for my friends, because they were like, you're going from this company to where are you going? Like, what is this place? But I kind of wanted to optimize for the learning opportunity and knowing that I was really aligned to a company's values. I think that's something really important too, where, you know, if you believe in what the company's doing and you're interested in the actual problems that they're solving, I think that's super, super important, because if you're just going by name or you're just going by reputation, there might be a mismatch, and, you know, you might get there and realize, wait a second, like, I actually don't believe in what this company is trying to do. And then that's going to be a really, really tough place to be in, because I think ideally, you know, you're building something that you believe in and that you really like.
Totally.
Oh, I wonder if we should do one question just so it feels like a classic Shop Talk Show episode. We'll end with one just for fun. Daryl Dixon writes in, I have a serious question regarding finding jobs. It has been said many times that looking on job boards, filling out job after app after job app after job app is the least efficient way of finding a job right now for beginning, and that networking is the best method. Well, this puts me in a tough spot. I'm self-taught in front and back-end web development, but I've only been doing it for just under a year. I have some self-initiated projects in my portfolio, a couple pro bono jobs, one paid job on my resume. It seems like I'd be able to get a job somewhere building websites, but I'm finding it very difficult to find anything, local or remote. Where I live, there aren't many local jobs for me. The local jobs are mostly unrelated to my skill set and things I'm not interested in. Remote jobs tend to be geared towards those with many years of experience and better developed software skills. I hate this city now that I've found my desired career path, and I really want to get out. Do you have any advice for escaping this hole? Am I or anyone else in a similar situation to mine out of luck, or is there a plausible escape plan?
Well, first of all, Daryl Dixon, did like the Walking Dead Daryl write this in?
Let's assume, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I really feel for you, Daryl. I mean, like, I wish I could ask Daryl about his network, right? Because Slack communities, you know, Twitter, all these things will help someone like Daryl find people in other cities that maybe hire remote workers that have that have opportunities that might match up better with skill sets, but also building that network and helping people get to know him means that, like, they can help him find better opportunities. And it's more than just like writing things down on a piece of paper and what he's qualified for. It's much more like, is this a person a good problem solver? Can you collaborate on projects with this person? You know, stuff like that.
Again, the network, you know, you can, every day you can be growing that.
I think, like, I totally agree with everything, Laura, that you just mentioned. And it does sound like a really tough situation. I mean, one thing that always kind of stands out to me is when people really do their homework about the companies that they're applying for. So, I mean, as much as you can, like, really tailor, like, here's what here's what kind of impact I might be able to bring to your specific team. And so, you know, if you can reach out to someone directly that works at a particular company, or try and learn a little bit more about what they're doing beyond, you know, what's on their homepage or what's kind of like on their public Twitter feed, just something to kind of show that, hey, you're really passionate about joining this team, and here's how you think that you can make a very specific impact. That might be a way to, once you've, you know, figured out any specific companies that you're interested in, that might be one way to, you know, show that you are really passionate and you are dedicated to kind of getting started.
Indeed. Good luck, Daryl. I think all that is wonderful advice for you to level up. I wish you the best. It seems like if you keep on keeping on with this, the good things are going to happen to you. It's kind of a buyer's market or whatever for people with good tech skills. It sounds like you are, you know, you have 1 year of experience, you're saying, building sites. So it's like, I'm sure you're well aware that you're not like super senior yet, you know? So, and I can understand that it might be a little hard convincing or getting a remote job. I would think remote jobs tend to have a slightly higher experience kind of thing, because I think at the moment, fair or unfair, feels a little riskier hiring someone remotely with a low experience level. I don't know. I don't know if that's fair or not. Let me do one thing quick. There's we'll help find somebody a job out there. There is a job opening in Brooklyn at a place called Radish Lab. They're looking for a senior WordPress developer, kind of a full stack WordPress developer, a self-starter, a problem solver, all those good things, team player, juggling multiple projects. They're looking for a WordPress person, you know, that can do CSS. They can do some JavaScript too. That's what they mean by full stack. So mobile first stuff, grunt and gulp stuff, light design stuff. They work in Git. They work in GitHub. Stuff with they're using the WP API for stuff. So if you're interested in that kind of headless CMS, or, you know, using JavaScript based APIs, awesome stuff. There, you know, it's the typical senior WordPress developer role. You know, you better know your way around WordPress. They are looking for somebody in Brooklyn to take that role. So check out the link to that Radish Lab job in our show notes. What else, Dave? You want to have some final notes?
I think that's all the time we have. I guess I kind of want to do one quick round table question. Is that okay? You what's your one tip for achieving career success? We'll start with Chris.
This is not an original thought, but it's very true for me, and I've heard other people articulate it better, but it's the writing. You need to be able to write words well, at least blog occasionally, have a personal site, have some examples of thoughts that you've articulated in writing. There's no bigger turn on for me as somebody who's hired some people before, and nothing has opened more doors for me than things that I've written.
Make words good. Great. Monica.
I feel like this one sounds super cliche, but always keep learning. I think the moment that you like stop learning, that's when your career is going to be in trouble, because that means you're going to be less able to take advantage of new opportunities or even create those opportunities for yourself. So if you're the smartest person in the room and you're not learning new things kind of on a day-to-day, then I think definitely keep yourself up to date, and just find something that you're passionate about, and just keep learning, like become a sponge.
All right, Laura.
Yeah, I mean, this has come up I think 14 times now, but like your network is everything. Whether it's someone to teach you that new thing, or to vent to when you've had a bad day, or to help you find that next opportunity, you know, whatever it is, your network, start building it and start focusing on the people who you can trust to help you keep growing.
All right. Thank you very much. I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for being on the show, Laura and Monica. We really appreciate it. If people aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? We'll start with Laura. And then what's one thing you'd like to plug before you leave?
Yeah, let me plug Building a Device Lab. Building a Device Lab, the book, just came out. If you are trying to test your stuff across multiple different kinds of devices, you want to build a lab, we wrote a book. My coworker Destiny and I wrote a book on this. You can Google it or look on my Twitter for that. And also, designingforperformance.com, I actually just made my book free online. You can still buy it, and all charities still go to charities that help women and marginalized people learn how to code. So definitely go check out those two books.
All right. Monica.
I definitely thanks so much for having me. I'll plug Shopify.com and our career site. We're definitely hiring. If anyone's interested in learning more about Toronto or Ottawa or Montreal or any of our other lovely, lovely Canadian offices, or if you're interested in kind of learning more about kind of our platform and looking into some of our theming opportunities, we also have a great partners program, Shopify.com/partners. Definitely good to check out as well. And you can find me on Twitter at Monzica.
All right. And we'll put all relevant links in the show notes. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come be on the show. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. If you could, vote it up. Star, heart, favorite, 5 stars. It's just that easy in your podcatcher of choice. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new job, because I think people, there's tens
of lots of
jobs
good stories.
Right,
the cool part about it is how focused it is on the front end stack. So it's a niche job board, really, for the types of things we talk about right here on Shop Talk Show. Speaking of which, shoptalkshow.com.